Welcome to Federal Insights for March. What's next for Zero Trust and the federal government, sponsored by Force 3?
It's one of the ironies of contemporary network architecture. To have full trust in them, you've got to establish zero trust. Pretty much all federal agencies are pursuing the zero trust architectural model. For the latest practical advice, I spoke with Forrester Research Principal Analyst Dr. Chase Cunningham, starting with an update from an earlier interview about a year ago. Since we last spoke, zero trust seems to be on the lips of pretty much every federal agency practitioner. What's your sense of how well this has penetrated the federal government, the whole concept? And is there any progress from, say, a year ago?
Yeah, I think there's quite a lot of progress from a year ago. A year ago, I was aware of about 10, maybe 12 different agencies that had sort of conversational projects going about zero trust. Now, fast forward, we're talking about 44 federal agencies that have dedicated line item funded tiger teams to go off and either research or start implementing zero trust strategically. So, you know, in the scale of a year, we've basically almost 3x what we were looking at. In the federal government, when anything moves that fast, that's impressive.
Now, the idea of zero trust, it's not a product, it's not a technology necessarily that you apply in the sense of you can buy it from a vendor. So what are the cost elements to getting to zero trust?
Well, the interesting thing I think that people kind of get wrapped up around when they think about zero trust is they're still trying to buy a zero trust technology or solution. And I remind people in workshops all the time that there is no zero trust technology. There are zero trust technologies that enable your zero trust strategy. This is about an approach. This is about leadership. This is about a grand strategic initiative. There is simply no button to push to be zero trust. So I think folks have to wrap their head around that and understand this is a leadership thing. This is a project and an end state. It is not a solution.
But you did say there are some technological elements to zero trust. Review those for us.
Yeah, so there are some things that enable zero trust. I mean, mainly when we look at that from the market standpoint, we're talking about really good identity and access management. We're talking about micro segmentation. We're talking about device health, and we're talking about data security, and then also being able to do all of that in an automated and orchestrated fashion using really good visibility and analytics.
So identity and access management, let's start there. You need to have what kinds of systems in place in order to get to zero trust on your identity and access management?
Yeah, well, I think we're trying to get to, and it seems like the federal government has aligned on it, is really to the elimination of the password. You know, there's a hashtag out there, kill the password. And the reason for that is because when you look at identity, you look at exploitation, all of the exploitation that's occurred pretty much has started with either a bad username and password or a human clicking something. So if we can eliminate those really easy overt problems with relatively binary solutions like multi-factor authentication, single sign-on, out of band, off, those type of things, we make it where we don't have to worry about the largest area of concern. And that's really the win that you're trying to get to, is not having to worry about easy problems. There should be, honestly, with technology, there should be no reason to have bad usernames and passwords as the avenue of compromise in enterprise anymore, not in 2020.
And doesn't that idea in some sense map over to the Internet of Things, where you don't have a person logging on, you have a device or something emanating data? And I think a lot of agencies are, and you can confirm this, trying to incorporate those types of devices as authenticated on the network. And so the idea of not having a good identity management system without passwords would mitigate in favor of IoT devices.
Yeah, that's actually some research that I'm working on right now with some other folks at Forrester, is the new definition of identity, because anything that sort of touches the network or can move electrons has an identity. It could be an IoT device, could be a thermostat, could be a user, could be, you name it, whatever it is, a firewall, it doesn't matter. If it has some sort of identifier, it has an identity, and most of those things usually have hard-coded usernames and passwords, so we want to eliminate all that.
And as far as human users, what is the regime then when you get past the standard username and password? What does it look like from the user standpoint? Again, pursuant to the ultimate idea of zero trust.
Where it really looks like is where you're running off of biometrics and out-of-band authentication on BYOD devices for end users. What we're trying to get to is where security is not so painful for users that they want to go around it, because then they negate the benefit of the security control. And honestly, the fact that we're in a cycle right now where everyone is being told across the country to work from home means that all these organizations have to figure out how to do this at speed and scale. Personally, I think this is the perfect use case for BYOD and for zero trust for the workforce.
That is to say, the coronavirus specifically is kind of a good example of the situation where you would want to have this, and why not have it for all situations?
Right. And it's interesting to me that now we're seeing all these like mega organizations, Adobe and IBM and a bunch of others, say, oh, now you go work from home. But honestly, they've been moving into this position for the last 10 years. Now they just don't have a choice. So it's a good thing that we have this kind of test case. If there's any benefit to this whole scenario, it's that we can prove that this model is really, really useful for global enterprises.
And as more people say do telework, and it looks like this is where the whole world is headed, what are some of the implications for VPNs and the access methodologies for, again, pursuant to zero trust, that you would have for people teleworking as opposed to being natively on the network with a Cat 5 or Cat 6 cable coming right into their device?
Yeah, so I actually wrote about this in my book, that I think that the VPN is one of the avenues of compromise we need to eliminate for zero trust. And the reason I say that is, if you combine bad passwords with a remote workforce and exploited endpoints, that gives you a direct pipe into the network via VPN, which is a bad thing. What we want to get to is where we're using the virtualized infrastructure and software-defined networking to push the controls of enterprise security out to the endpoint, and the user never has to do VPN. And if you do that, you again eliminate a large area of compromise. And that's what Google has done with BeyondCorp. That's what a few other organizations have done with their particular flavor of zero trust. So it's achievable, and there are technologies that enable it, but it is not legacy VPN. Legacy VPN is just as bad as bad passwords.
So it sounds like the whole view of authentication is reversed. You have the network intelligently looking outward at the devices, as opposed to the devices looking inward at the network to see if they can get by.
Yeah. And if you had said, you know, this model made sense 3 years ago, everyone would have said you were bonkers. But where we are now, thanks to the current state of infrastructure, virtualization, the stuff going on with these new approaches, we can do this. Now, it has to happen at a large scale, and it's going to take organizations a long time to get towards that perfect end state, but it is achievable.
Dr. Chase Cunningham is a principal analyst with Forrester Research. More of this interview after this first break. I'm Tom Temin.
End-to-end security starts by adopting zero trust policies that encompass network security, vulnerability management, and access control. Force3 is the network security company serving federal agencies and the DoD for more than 25 years. We take a six-step approach to guiding federal technology teams, from strategy development to enterprise-wide implementation to achieve zero trust security. Learn more about what Force3 can do to improve your agency's security protocols at force3.com.
Welcome back to our interview with Dr. Chase Cunningham, principal analyst with Forrester Research, discussing zero trust. And let's move on to another piece of technology you said that agencies need to have in place, and that is micro-segmentation. And that relates to the virtualization of networks.
Well, when I say micro-segmentation in the context of zero trust, I mean micro-segmentation across the entirety of that infrastructure. So most of the time when people think about segmentation, they usually mean firewalls, which mean VLANs. We're talking about a much grander approach to segmentation, where the endpoint is isolated from the network. The firewalls are in much more granular control. The insides of the enterprise are much more vectored in what they allow in and out. It's session-based. It's not connection-based. And it is a micro-segmented approach, because if you look at the history of exploitation, it wasn't ever that one machine got hit that was the bad day. It was when a lateral movement occurred and it went through the entirety of the enterprise. And if we micro segment, we can get away from that being a problem. It's actually okay to have a hacked machine. It's not okay to have a hacked VLAN.
Sure. And what kinds of sensor technology do you have to understand that this hacked segment is to be isolated and the other 10 million microsegments nearby are still okay?
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring that up, because that's where the analytics side of this goes into it. And what you've got to be able to do is to get really good telemetry from all of those potential points within the infrastructure. And you've got to be able to use the outcome from that telemetry. What I find looking at analytics in the market is usually they're able to give you everything all the time, which is not necessarily useful. We need really good, useful, outcome-based analytics that are dialed into the enabling that strategy. We're not trying to get to a space where we know everything all the time, because we simply can't respond to it at scale. So the analytics has to enable the outcome, not the outcome being based on waiting for the analytics to equal something.
And do you have the sense that these types of analytical tools exist commercially, or is this something that perhaps everyone has to program for themselves?
No, they exist commercially. And I think where people get a little bit confused is what we don't mean is we don't mean necessarily the SIEM solutions. People, for some reason, associate SIEM with analytics. SIEM is a window, is a viewing tool. When we say analytics, we mean really good data that says this thing is doing this and it touches these assets and this is how correlation occurs and et cetera. We're looking at triangulated sort of information. We're not trying to just say, show me everything in one UI, because that may not be useful.
For many agencies, then the question becomes which data is relevant to this process of making sure the zero trust is in place. And the other question is how far back data needs to be kept, because I think a lot of agencies are, organizations in general, are worried about the costs associated with data storage and data withdrawal, especially when you're in a commercial cloud.
Yeah, I think that what comes up in that particular scenario, which is a very valid point, is that most of the data that you should be looking at, I think based on research, should be kind of less than 90 days worth of information. And the reason I say that is most attacks, when you look at what occurs, the initial escalation and all of the stuff that is usually indicative of a problem is able to be detected within that first 30, 60, 90 days. If it's going back and doing forensics, you're not going to need forensics for something that's been going on for 180 days in real time. That's a bigger, longer project you should be pulling that data from. So I personally think it's one of those instances where if it was me, I'd say that the live data that I want is going to be no more than 90 days.
So there is some fences on what you have to store, basically.
Yeah, I mean, storing everything all the time is cost prohibitive. And honestly, the value of that data continues to degrade over time as well. So, you know, there are some compliance requirements which require you to keep that. But if you're going to live in the compliance arena, there are ways to shovel that off to AWS and Azure and store that for the long haul and save money.
Got it. All right. So we've talked about identity and access management and micro segmentation and analytical tools. Does that pretty much cover the technology base that you have to head towards zero trust?
Well, I think the last line in this, and this is where we run counter to the old paradigm of zero trust, is that data is the single hardest problem in this space to solve. The old paradigm was discover the data, create a schema, and then build segments around it. Well, nowadays, data is not necessarily just an entry in a database record or a spreadsheet. It is a blog someone writes or an email someone sends or whatever. Like, that asset that has value that enables the business is the quote data. So the hardest problem, I think, to solve in this whole thing, and what should come at the end of that life cycle, is figuring out how to do very specific data security related controls. It's not easy. And in the context of strategy, it makes more sense to think simple problems and solve the really hard ones when you're down the road towards the end state, not the other way around.
Dr. Chase Cunningham is principal analyst at Forrester Research. We'll have our third and final segment of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
End-to-end security starts by adopting zero trust policies that encompass network security, vulnerability management, and access control. Force3 is the network security company serving federal agencies and the DoD for more than 25 years. We take a six-step approach to guiding federal technology teams, from strategy development to enterprise-wide implementation to achieve zero trust security. Learn more about what Force3 can do to improve your agency's security protocols at force3.com.
Welcome back to the third and final segment of our interview with Dr. Chase Cunningham, Principal Analyst at Forrester Research. Our topic is Zero Trust Networks. And you mentioned that 44 federal agencies now have line items in their budget requests to do Zero Trust. Let's presume they have these elements in place, including a decent data strategy, and I guess that's something you never stop evolving. What do they do now that they have the technological elements? But that doesn't necessarily add up to a zero trust network per se.
Right. So most of the federal agencies that we've talked with, like you said, they have all of these capabilities because they've been doing this longer than anybody else. They've been in the fight longer than anybody else. For them, really where it is spending the time that could potentially be up to a decade realigning these strategic initiatives with the technology to get towards a more functional end state. And I've been doing workshops with lots of the Fed, and a lot of their leaders are saying, like, look, we realize this is going to take us a decade to fix because it's taken us 30 or 40 years to get here. And that's the final stage for them, is the long haul, the end state goal, and then taking very prescriptive steps to get towards that end state.
Well, it sounds like they have to develop almost a risk management priority before they can start to take a 10-year project on. How do you approach that?
Well, most of them, when you look at the mapping that they have from their compliance requirements, compliance tells you what your sort of risk appetite is and what your liability sort of is. So that's where I think that they've already done a good job of lining up where they should start. And most of the organizations in the federal government are further along in the maturity curve than commercial organizations. So they have a leg up, honestly, and that's why the industry collectively is following the Fed, because the Fed, interestingly enough, is the leader in cybersecurity, whether anyone wants to admit it or not.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. What are some of the commercial models for zero trust you might have seen? But it sounds like federal government is ahead and there's 44 agencies still trying to figure it out, or even trying to figure it out. Then the commercial world must be way behind.
The heavily regulated organizations, banking, finance, and healthcare are probably ahead of everyone else. But then now, because of what's gone on with cloud and BYOD and the transition of the entire space, everyone everywhere has to figure out the cybersecurity problem. So you have organizations that might have three or four employees that are vendors and are third parties and connected into larger enterprises that could potentially be the avenue of compromise if zero trust and segmentation and all those things are not applied across the entirety of this infrastructure. So it's a much bigger problem, and it continues to get larger all the time, more tech, more speed, more apps, all that. But there is a solution, and it's a strategic solution. It is not a technical one, but it has to start happening sooner rather than later.
And I wanted to ask you about applications, because you mentioned BYOD. You also mentioned trading partners. And that gets away from the basic applications that agencies have in the cloud, which is collaboration and email and so on. More difficult is getting your enterprise-related, mission-related applications into a mobile state, into even a BYOD state. And that would seem like another big challenge here if you want to have zero trust, but also the productivity of people from remote access.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of innovation go on in the space around using containers within applications to enable segmentation. And I think that that's kind of where the industry standard is going, because containers are able to do so much now that you're able to basically leverage those as an application sort of health check and segmentation solution. And that's being tied to users and access and all those. So there are some interesting innovators in the space that are making it where the applications are also able to be segmented basically through the entirety of the stack, which is a pretty aggressive approach, but it's very enabling.
And virtualized applications and virtualized memory and networks and all of this exist at the higher levels of the ISO stack. You still have wiring at some point. Is there anything that you have to do there in order to support zero trust?
Yeah, you've got to be able to do to control it and to know what's going on with that area. But most of the time when we look at what's going on in the physical space, we've done a good enough job with NAC and with fiber optics and those to really know if someone's messing with our physical connections, that's a whole other level of problem. And it's one of those, especially in the federal government, if there's any one thing they do a really good job of, it's looking at the physical side of the equation.
And getting to the idea of that physical side, you know, there's a ban under Section 889 of the use of Chinese-made telecom gear and video surveillance gear, not only directly by the government, but also by contractors. And that gets to the question of exfiltration. The zero trust discussion we've been having concentrates on inbound traffic from devices. What about traffic that's outbound? Is there a zero trust as to the source of a demand for data?
Correct. And that's where we also think about the visibility and analytics side of this. And that's why I'm a big proponent of not analytically sort of focusing on everything all the time, because if you're able to look at an enterprise and look at really good outcome-based analytics, you should be able to see anomalies that occur and things that don't make sense. And that's, when we say outcomes, that's what we're trying to get people to understand, is I want to know what's going on in my enterprise and what is entering and leaving, but I need to know with granularity why contextually that matters. It doesn't do me any good to know that there's data leaving. That's just enterprise business. But I need to know within all that data leaving, what doesn't make sense contextually? And that's when I make a decision to either stop it, intercept it, forensics, whatever.
And what are the implications of zero trust for organizations, federal agencies that are deploying applications to the public, where anybody and anyone is entitled to come in?
Yeah, that's a difficult problem to solve. And I think really where we see growth in that space is around the virtualization and being able to spin up infrastructure, let them use it, do whatever they need to do, and then just delete the infrastructure and make it where you can do that on the fly. And that's kind of what you want to get to, where if I'm going to have a new application and I need to open it up to the public, I'll spin it up in Azure, AWS, or whatever, make it do what it's going to do, and then at a certain end date, rather than continue to try and defend this thing and keep it, you know, care and feed the monster, I just obliterate the infrastructure and then spin up another copy.
So in other words, you're always starting from a clean, trusted image, even though someone might be coming back for the umpteenth time.
Right. And then there's, the users and the data records and all those things can be stored off of that infrastructure so that you know that they're not going to be, you know, obliterated every time. But the infrastructure itself, that's where the beachhead is established and where lateral movement occurs. So if I can eliminate that, I eliminate their established back door into that network.
So bottom line, then, you do need some technological pieces and understanding in place. But if you're thinking in terms of zero trust, you better think in terms of a long-term strategy and not something you're going to install next week or next month or next fiscal year even.
Yeah, I tell people all the time that I liken this to your own like physical health. Like there are some basic things that you do to keep yourself healthy, but you realize that you're doing these things because you want to live a long, full, happy life. It's not because you're trying to get into a state of movie fitness right now. This is, you know, you eat right, you exercise, you don't smoke, those type of things, because if you do the right things with, you know, a focus on the outcome, a long, healthy life, you'll get there. And it's not going to happen today, but you're working towards it all the time.
Dr. Chase Cunningham is principal analyst at Forrester Research. Find this interview in its entirety at federalnewsnetwork.com. Search Federal Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights for March. What's next for Zero Trust and the federal government? Sponsored by Force 3 on Federal News Network.